Transportation to order on February the 14th, Oregon's birthday, to order. And first thing on our agenda is going to be the possible introduction of committee bills. And Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair. You have five drafts at your seat at the dais. And those LC drafts are as follows for your consideration for introduction as committee bills. LC 2687 authorizes a vehicle dealer to charge a processing fee for collecting fees and completing and submitting documents to transfer a certificate of title and registration. It allows the dealer to charge a processing fee also to complete documents if the vehicle to be titled is in another jurisdiction, and authorizes the Department of Transportation to limit the amount of that fee. LC 2688, also dealing with motor vehicles, increases the weight of a motor vehicle from less than 8,000 pounds to less than 12,000 pounds for purposes of including registration, definition of Class 2 all-terrain vehicles, and requiring a vehicle to remain in the right lane. Does not apply to motor trucks or truck tractors. LC 2689 would require the Department of Transportation to classify a vehicle dealer certificate as a franchised vehicle dealer, independent vehicle dealer, broker, or wholesaler. It limits activities of that dealer based on a classification of dealer certificate. It creates an offense of conducting business outside classification of dealer certificate and punishes that offense by a maximum of 1 year imprisonment, $6,250 fine, or both. The fourth LC draft you have at your seat is LC 2637, which reduces the threshold contract value for requiring that residential construction contracts be in written form, and it makes a contract voidable by the consumer if not in written form when required. And finally, the fifth LC draft we have for your consideration is a joint memorial to petition Congress to preserve the federal funding for the maintenance of navigation channels at current levels and to fully expend all monies collected in the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
On that last one, we need the LC number since...
Oh, LC, excuse me, the only memorial was LC 2797. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
All right, I would entertain a motion to move these drafts as committee bills.
Sure, I move the LC drafts 2687, 2688, 2689, 2797, and 2637 to committee.
Senator Whitsett moves the LC drafts to committee. Is there any discussion? To be adopted as committee bills.
To be introduced as committee bills.
Is there any discussion? If not, clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Mester?
Aye.
Senator Kazansky?
Aye.
Senator Starr?
Aye.
Senator Whitson?
Aye.
Chair Berger?
Aye. All right. Now we will have some public hearings. We'll open with a public hearing on Senate Bill 78.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 78 requires drivers to submit accident reports to the Department of Transportation. It requires the department to make accident forms available upon request once those forms are developed through police departments, sheriff's offices, and other suitable agencies or individuals. I have also provided you a repealed section, so you should find that right behind your staff measure summary, the preliminary. And so, in other words, instead of under current law where it allows the accident reports, the individual to file the accident report with one of four places, that is either the department, the sheriff's office, the chief of police, or any other agency that the Department of Transportation might establish for receiving those reports, instead of those options, under current law, it removes that and instead requires the individual to submit those reports to the department. We have received a no revenue impact, and we have not received any word from fiscal on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. I'll call Robin Freeman.
afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Robin, if you'll move your one of the microphones over a little. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I won't read my testimony today. I'll just give you a summary. Senate Bill 78 streamlines the accident reporting process by directly routing reports to DMV. The bill reduces incidences of unintended suspensions for driving privileges. Currently, if you're in a crash or a collision and you meet a certain set of criteria, you're required to report those accidents and collisions to DMV. This doesn't change any of those reporting requirements. This is just basically a streamlining bill that would benefit law enforcement and DMV as far as processing.
Thank you, Robin. Are there any questions of Robin? We have some, do we have copies here of Robin's testimony? Okay, I think Gary has it. All right. Are there any questions? I'll give the committee just a minute.
Thank you.
All right. You've had a chance to look it over?
I have a question.
All right. Senator Metzger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, as I'm getting the feedback here, working the mic. Uh-huh. So, the reports now, the police reports will go directly to DMV. You no longer report to the police agency. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, no, this does not impact police reports. Police okay. also report collisions. This is a DMV report that we use to track accidents that are reportable on your driver's license record, and also insurance verification. We use it for insurance verification purposes. So police reporting, they will still report accidents to DMV. This is the person involved in the collision. That's either the owner or the driver.
I understand that. I guess my question is, I just want to make sure I understand. If you're involved in an accident, you're required to make a report. I'm saying, is this the only report now you're required to make? Is the Department of Transportation reform report?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, yes.
I mean, before, for example, if I bear with me here, if I'm in an accident in the city of Portland, I go to the Portland Police Station to file a report. What you're saying under this now, I may get the report there, but it goes to the Department of Transportation, not the city of Portland, for example. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, partially correct. Before you could, it's the same report you've always filed.
Right.
But you could either drop those off at a field office, a DMV field office. You could mail those, or you could drop those off in the county or the city at a law enforcement agency where the accident occurred. And any of those offices would then forward it to DMV. This just takes law enforcement out of that loop because reports were getting lost or they were arriving late and then we were suspending people's driving license privileges. So this is just streamlining, taking law enforcement out of that loop.
The reason I was asking, Madam Chair, is that, and I don't know if this has an impact or not, but I'm thinking of that when you're involved in an accident, at least with my insurance company, State Farm, part of the requirements is that you know, the accident was reported to law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
So now if I'm not reporting to law enforcement, I'm still reporting, I'm reporting to DMV, but I just wondered if our private insurance carriers, I mean, if that impacts that, because it says we have to report, you know, was it reported to law enforcement? I don't know. I just don't want to make sure that I find out I still have to report that because the DMV form technically violates my policy because I didn't report to police. I mean, that's my only question.
Senator Krasanski is recognized.
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. I think the way this is set up, because currently you have multiple options. They're just taking some of those options away, where you used to be able to deliver that report to a local law enforcement mm-hmm. agency. They're going to take them out of the loop there. So you could currently today, under the law, not go through the department to hand that in, but instead send it directly to DMV or drop it off at one of the sub-offices or substation mm-hmm. type of places. But that wouldn't stop you from still reporting to the police department that you had been involved in an accident. I mean, I know that in EPD, Eugene Police Department, and some of the larger ones are not even taking reports anymore. Mm-hmm. And you're lucky to even get something logged in onto their call-in log. Mm-hmm. But I don't think this here seems to me is just trying to make sure the reports actually get to DMV instead of potentially getting caught up in some file at the local police department and never getting
right.
processed through.
Well, Gabby?
Madam Chair, that's correct. This doesn't impact your reporting requirements at all. It simply takes the law enforcement out of the loop as far as a conduit to DMV for the reporting requirements. So they're just not going to be forwarding those on. And the reason behind that is a lot of times those reports did not reach DMV, and then we had to initiate suspension of people's driving privileges. So we're hoping this is designed to help folks not be suspended as often, not initiate those suspensions, and just be more efficient. But it does not impact reporting requirements as they are currently established.
Yeah. Well,
Senator Metz.
Yeah, my only point was, and this is probably more for the insurance people that will handle in my business committee, but most of your forms, I mean, I appreciate the streamlining and or saying that you have the option, you can go to the police, but if the requirement is you report to DMV, they're not going to report to police. And I just want to make sure that on that our private insurance carriers, if the state no longer says you go through a police agency, that that if necessary, they adjust their forms to say you meet DMV reporting requirements and not find out later someone was not covered in insurance because they didn't file with the police agency.
Right.
So that's not your fault, but it's just that I think that insurance carriers and the law need to be on the same page, and it is not uncommon for a carrier to deny coverage because you didn't meet a certain requirement, and we're now saying that you just have to go straight to DMV. So someone is going to follow the law accordingly. But I don't want to get a constituent letter 2 years later and say, "Well, I never filed with the police department," and that's what State Farm or Farmers told me. So I think that's something we'll take up with the insurance folks on that end. But consistency, I just think, is really important on that. Have you had any dialogue with the insurance industry on the streamlining bill, and whether they had any concerns about it?
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, no, we haven't heard of any concerns from anyone, any parties.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Senator Whitfield?
Chair Bridger, to follow up on what Senator Metzger was asking, I think he asked you, have you sought out the insurance companies to find out if they have input in this? Do they actually even know this is happening?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, no, I have not sought out the insurance industry's opinion on this bill.
All right, if there are no other questions, I'm going to move along. I see Senator Johnson is in the audience, and I'm going to close the public hearing and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 448 and welcome Senator Johnson to the podium.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with the indulgence of the committee, I would like to ask Martin Loring from ODOT Transit to join me.
Okay.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Betsy Johnson. I'm the state senator from Senate District 16. And, Madam Chair, I'm here to bring you a bill that I hope you will like. I've just had the privilege of sitting next to you for the last 2 hours in a subcommittee meeting dealing with transportation. And several times you raised the question about what's happening with rural communities and their ability to have adequate public transportation. This bill helps rural communities, especially coastal communities, with respect to public transportation and in particular, inner city transportation. It also has the added value of maximizing the use of public transportation vehicles, specifically school buses, to provide public transit in certain circumstances. So it really creates a maximum availability for public transportation users. I will ask Mr. Loring to answer any questions or add any additional details, but we think this is exactly the kind of bill that the chair has been looking for to augment opportunities for rural communities to have transit options.
All right, we might take just a moment to take a look at your handout here.
Sure.
I'm glad that she has maintained her.
While you're looking, Madam Chair, I might just add that as of a few moments ago, there's no one opposition. In fact, you may hear positive testimony from the Transit Association. There may be the need for some additional clarification with the Department of Education with respect to the use of school buses, but we had a meeting out in the hallway and have all agreed to work very cooperatively to harmonize any discrepancies.
All right. Questions?
Madam Chair, this bill then would allow school buses to be used to transport individuals along a regular school bus route, or you're anticipating using school buses outside of the regular school bus route?
Chair Berger, Senator Starr, my name is Martin Loring. I work for the Oregon Department of Transportation as administrator of its public transit division. To Senator Starr's question, probably the easiest way to explain it is give you the real example of the problem that gave rise to that part of the statute. It had to do with the city of the Astoria School District and the city of Astoria and the Sunset Empire Transit District. The Chamber of Commerce over there has a annual crab and seafood festival. And some 10,000 of us that don't live in that community,
30,000
of us that don't live in the community traipse over there to enjoy that the fun and good food that's associated with that. The Chamber of Commerce contracted with the Transit District to help organize some transportation. They didn't have enough vehicles. They worked with the school district to make school buses available during the summer for that incidental use. The school bus statute, RS-325, allows that sort of use under the direction and control of the district. And the state's expert on that is in the room today if you wanted to speak with Deborah Lincoln from the Department of Education. But the motor carrier statute from our sister division, the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, conflicts with that. It says that school buses are exempt from the regulation of the Motor Carrier Transportation Division only when they are used to carry the pupils of that particular district. And this didn't appear to be in the public interest. Senator Johnson's predecessor, Senator Dukes, worked with the local community and handed the problem off to her successor. And the notion was that if the district wants to help out solve a community problem during the summer, they get more effective utilization of that resource that's in place. It appeared that the public interest was served. Why not allow that? So the particular provisions relating to school buses in Senate Bill 448 would harmonize the two statutes and allow, not force, but allow that use if the district wanted to do that.
I'd like to zero in a little bit on the communities that have lost Greyhound service. And that really is a terrible thing for people that are trying to get to a particular medical service. And do I understand in here that not only they can take them 40 miles from the point of origin, but that they don't have to have a regular schedule? In other words, the transit that would be operating and picking up people, taking them within 40 miles, they don't have to say the bus is going to be there at 2 and 4 and 6 and 8, or did I just read that into the bill?
Chair Berger, again, the motor carrier statutes are fairly complex, and they're fairly old. They were written, I'm not sure when, but when that area of commerce was regulated by the Public Utility Commission. With us today in the room also is the administrator of ODOT's Motor Carrier Transportation Division, Greg Del Ponte. If we get down into a sufficient level of detail in what exactly the law says and means, I would ask to involve Greg. But let me give you my interested bystanders or a take on what I think the statute means. The Motor Carrier Transportation Division regulates regular service, which is the scheduled fixed route service to which the chair alluded. It also regulates in a different way service that's, for lack of a better word, irregular. you want to pull together, say a senior center wanted to pull together a group of people to go to, I don't know, the Marine Science Center from more than 40 miles away, or an outing that would not be repeated on a regular schedule. Well, technically, under certain circumstances, that would require general authority to provide, if you're doing it on a for-hire basis, would require authority from the district, if you do it on, or from the division. If you do it on a regular basis, then it needs, then it gets into the area where there's economic regulation by the Motor Carrier Transportation Division, and the applicant has to file for approval of routes, rates,
right,
and that application is subject to protest. If a protest is filed timely, then there's a hearing held before a hearings officer, and it can take a while. The situation to which you alluded, the situation with Greyhound pulling out of 35 of the Oregon communities it used to serve, 35 of the 50 communities that it used to serve, and abandoning the whole coastal network up 101 that it used to serve, has created situations where other smaller jurisdictions have stepped forward to fill the void. But under a strict reading of the current statute, they need authority to put that regular service in place. And again, the reason for this bill came out of one of those circumstances. It actually preceded Greyhound's pullout. But the Tillamook County Transportation District is a transportation district organized by a vote of the people under Oregon law in 1997. The primary purpose that the electors of Tillamook County voted to tax themselves and form a district and put that service in place was to provide daily service between Tillamook and Portland. They don't have regular route authority for that service. So in the face of a protest, the Motor Carrier Transportation Division had no alternative but to issue a cease and desist order. And the district appealed that order, and a hearing will be scheduled to settle the matter at some point. That's where the good senator got involved to try to make the issue moot by correcting the law. Because in this case, Tillamook County runs from runs to Portland, you know, 7 days a week, once on Sundays, two times a day, every other day of the week. There's no private carrier that wants to do that service. They get good ridership on it. It's in the public interest. It appears common sense. They ought to be allowed to do that.
And absent this legislation, they can't, leaving those people with no option.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other questions? Okay. Senator Prusansky.
I guess if someone wanted to come in and, let's say, for hire and actually be a private entity, what would be this process that would need to be utilized to have them come back and offer service? Where, because it looks like we can't offer this service if there's someone that's willing to offer for hire service.
Chair Berger, Senator Prusansky, that's a good question. The Motor Carrier Transportation Division does have a process and an application form to apply for the irregular authority or regular route authority, and any private sector entity or anyone covered by the statute seeking to obtain that authority would pursue that avenue. And once a month, the division publishes a notice to make any potentially affected party aware of all those applications for authority that have been filed. Greg needs to correct me if I'm wrong, but I think affected parties have 15 days to respond or something like that. But the notion, this amendment would not change the fundamental notion, which is that the public sector ought to, the private sector on a for-profit basis ought to do everything it can do where it can legitimately make a profit. The only reason for a public sector entity to get involved is where there's significant public benefit and not the, you know, and there's no opportunity for that private sector firm to make a profit doing it. I think I've answered the question. If not, you'll correct me.
Two other questions.
Sure. Follow up.
The equipment that's used by schools, districts, or companies that are providing public transportation for school purposes, is there anything that we need to be concerned with having it being opened up for use by for other purposes besides transporting kids? And I don't know, seatbelt law, anything. Is there anything that we need to be aware of
Chair Berger, Senator Brzezinski, that is outside my area of expertise. The assumption reading 325, that provision of 325, is that whatever requirements obtain to that school bus in its primary use, transporting pupils, would come along with that vehicle.
Okay.
So, for instance, school buses don't now have seat belts.
All right.
They wouldn't have seat belts in the already used.
Okay.
And, Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I would just add that we, in our impromptu meeting out in the hallway, there is an expert in the room, Deborah Lincoln from the Department of Ed. She is their school bus expert, and she raised a couple of other questions that may profit from some additional refinement, and we're perfectly willing to work with her to make sure that we are harmonious. Our main interest in moving the bill along is the fact that this solves a rural transportation problem, and you have our absolute agreement that we'll work collaboratively with the Department of Ed to make sure that the kinds of issues that you resolved or that you raised are addressed.
And one last question.
Yes.
And this is for the Senator. It seems to me that if this is something that you're trying to get in place immediately, there's no emergency clause at this point. So while you're talking about it, you may be wanting to put that emergency clause in, or it's not going to go in effect until next year, January 06.
Thank you very much for the, Madam Chair, Senator Brzezinski, thank you very much for that piece of advice, and I will take that under immediate consultation with the department as soon as we leave the witness table.
All right. Any other questions? If not, we have some other people to testify. Martin Loring. And
Madam Chair, Mr. Yes. Loring is leaving.
All right, and Roger Marks.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Roger Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Transit Association. We're just here to lend our strong support to this. What this is simply the ongoing restructuring of the laws. At one time, Greyhound served this whole state, and that's why Motor Carrier had these rules and regulations. Well, I don't want to say anything too disparaging, but Greyhound wants to drive from Seattle to San Francisco and stop twice in Oregon, and they're not going to serve any of the rural communities. Into that void have stepped public transit agencies that weren't originally going to do that. And the perfect example is the Tillamook Transportation District that, contrary to what Martin said, it was really organized to provide transportation in and around Tillamook. But very quickly they realized there was no way for people from Tillamook to get to Portland. And they have instituted a very popular system that runs bus twice a day, one in the morning, one in the evening, for a number of people that are actually commuting from Tillamook to, and they go only to Hillsborough and tie right into the TriMet system there. It's a practical solution to the problem. I really applaud the Department of Transportation, the Motor Carrier Division, for stepping forward and saying, let's change this so Martin Loring's organization is in charge instead of motor carriers, because there's no Greyhound around anymore. And I can tell you from talking to my membership, they're not interested in the areas where there is private transportation, inner city private transportation. They're not interested in getting into it. But where there is none offered, then something has to be done. And if you notice, if you drive up and down I-5, Wilsonville, which has a transportation system, transit district, has a connecting bus that brings public employees down and connects to Salem Area Transit. It's just a practical solution for people who need to take public transportation. We'd really appreciate it if you would support the bill.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 448. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 178.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 178 allows, excuse me, a person to provide training or education in the driving of motor vehicles without a commercial driving training school certificate or driver training instructor certificate if the person provides limited education or training for specialized purposes. The measure would allow the department to determine by rule the types of specialized purposes for which this exception would apply. We have received a no revenue impact. We have not received any word from fiscal on this measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Robin Freeman.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back, Robin.
Thank you. Robin Freeman for the Oregon Department of Transportation. Oregon law requires enterprises that educate and train persons to drive motor vehicles to be certified as commercial driver training schools. Senate Bill 178 would give the department rulemaking authority to determine when a commercial driver training school certificate is not required. This bill gives the department authority to define in rule which entities will be exempt from the requirement to have a commercial driver training school certificate. Current law exempts businesses and nonprofit agencies engaged in educating and training persons for a profession or an accredited secondary school, college, or university. However, certain other types of driver training may not warrant licensing the business or the person as a commercial driver school. Excuse me. This training may be very limited or specialized in nature or delivered infrequently. Some examples may include physical or occupational therapists who train disabled drivers to operate vehicles outfitted with adaptive equipment, such as an amputee that's learning to use hand controls, one-day classes that train people how to drive in adverse weather conditions, high-speed driver training, employee training conducted by law enforcement agencies or municipal or county governments, or computer-based training delivered via the Internet. Historically, the department has not required these types of entities to obtain a license and requests rule authority to continue this practice by clarifying specific types of training that would be excluded. Current law provides authority for the department to impose civil penalties against uncertified trainers and instructors, and we do not believe fines should be assessed against entities that conduct specialized driver training or driver training as an incidental part of their work. We ask the committee to support this bill as it allows the department to develop administrative rules that identify specific driver training activities that will not require a commercial driver training school certificate. Thank you.
All right. Questions? Senator Starr? No questions?
There's just some controversial bills that we've had from the department today. So.
All right. Well, I don't see anybody else to testify, Robin. So thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 178. I'll now open a public hearing on Senate Bill 488. Judith?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Senate Bill 488 modifies the offense of violating the speed limit by requiring drivers to drive 20 miles per hour or less in school zones when children are present or when the flashing light is in operation. It does declare an emergency effective July 1st, 2005. I have passed out at your seat also a reference to the definitions for your easy reference that are indicated in the bill, the meaning of when children are present, and also the definition relating to when the flashing light is indicating children are in the school zone. We have received a no revenue impact, and we just received the fiscal literally when we were on our way down to the hearing room. So do please note we do have the fiscal there. It's not anticipated in the governor's budget. The Legislative Fiscal Office tells us that 135 school zones indicate that the 20-mile-per-hour school speed zone is in effect at all times or else at times posted, and that 65% would need to have the signs replaced, with a total estimated cost in other funds of $78,570. The information campaign by ODOT to inform folks of this change, they estimate to be $20,000 to be funded from the Federal Transportation Safety Grants. Also, you will see that the League of Cities surveyed cities of various population sizes about the cost of that signage change. At the very bottom line, you'll see a range from approximately $83,000 to $786,000 for 235 cities to deal with the signage changes. And if there is a second page to the fiscal statement from the Association of Counties estimating a cost of $90,000 statewide for the counties to change signs to comply with the measure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't see. Committee, when we got this bill in the last session, it was brought to us by ODOT as a child safety bill. And in the effort to define when children are present, I believe that the bill was, I think it was passed with very good intent by the legislature. I think they wanted to try to correct the problem. The unintended consequence was that obviously the legislature didn't mean for people to be stopped at 2 a.m. unless they were driving beyond the city speed zone. Now, if they were driving beyond the city speed zone, they were going to get stopped there regardless. But that was an unintended consequence of that. One of the things, though, when you look at how many schools have already put their signs at all times posted, one of the school zones in Coos Bay is on highway, one of the schools, it's on highway 101 as you drive south, it's the Bunker Hill School. People are on the highway moving at a rapid speed and they come to the Bunker Hill School. And the state police were giving tickets out there prior to any of this law being changed. And there was quite a ruckus about it. But many of the parents of the children that went to the Bunker Hill School were strongly in favor of people having to slow down. I went yesterday to Coquille and had to go by the Bunker Hill School on Highway 101, and it took me a minute to realize I wondered why the man was trying to stop in the middle of the highway as he came around the curve. But it was the entire traffic slowed down. This was on a Sunday afternoon, and they slowed down for just this one part before and after the Bunker Hill School, and then they carried on up to the 55 mile an hour allowed limit. I suppose that that is inconvenient for some people, but when I look at the amount of money that would have to be spent by the cities and the counties and so forth, I'm hoping that all of you are thinking of a simpler way to correct the unintended consequence. So I see President Peter Courtney is in, and I will invite him to the table to tell us perhaps he has some better ideas than some of the rest of us.
You made the committee up.
What's that?
You did make this committee up, so we're here because it's your call.
I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator, District 11, which is parts of Salem and Jervis and Woodburn. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, north, in Salem, 97303. Sorry if I kept you waiting. The leadership of the counties was in my office. They're not very happy with me right now because I had to leave. So, anyway, Chair Berger, Vice Chair, what's it, the members of the Transportation Committee, Senate Transportation Committee. I'm here today to talk about a little piece of legislation, Senate Bill 488, which I think you're familiar with, which I think has 2,000 signatures on it over in the House side. Its House version does something like that. And that's an exaggeration, obviously, but I think there's 50-some signatures on it. And as you know, last session we passed a little bill. It's called the School Zones Bill. And it's created some stir in different parts of Oregon and also my own backyard. I've heard about the bill. And under the bill, as you know, it's the 20 miles speed limit applies 24/7, basically in schools and residential areas, where the normal speed was 30 miles per hour, and on busy or rural roads where the normal speed is higher, the 20 mile an hour speed limit applies as posted, or when the lights are flashing. I think this is a tough bill for me to talk about because I think the law was very well intended. Now I'm getting deadly serious. Very well intended. And I think that there are quite a few sessions in which transportation experts studied this issue and studied this issue and studied this issue. But as intended it is, I think it has caused some frustrations and some real concern among the general public. As I say, this counterpart to 488 is on the other side is House Bill 2365. And I suggest in this measure, and I'm doing it very generally, that we look at it changing the law that we passed in 2003. But it needs some work. This bill, the draft of it needs some work. And the reason I have my very learned and high council staff here is, it's my understanding is the bill's been drafted, and the same thing happened on House Bill 2365. There's some flaws in the drafting of it, and I believe there's some experts here from ODOT can talk about that. It overlooks the fact that the 2003 law changed the definition of when school children are present, which was the famous phrase, which as I understand, was discussed since B.C. around here. What does when children present mean? You got law enforcement people saying it means you have parents, you have people driving by in a car. You know, what does it mean? To this day, I do not really know what that means. I think you could come up with 5,000 interpretation of when children are present. Now, the point is that if we were to pass Senate Bill 488 in its current form, we would end up with a law that says the 20-mile-an-hour speed limit applies only when children are actually at crosswalks. It would not protect children who are walking along a sidewalk right next to the school. This is clearly not the intent of the bill. So the bill before you, and I hate to say this because some of you know me, some of you don't, and I can tell the way you're looking at me, it's flawed. So that means I'm flawed, which I will fully admit to you. But I wanted you to understand that it's a work in progress. I use that phrase. It's evolving as I speak to you. At least I hope it is. In other words, if we want to restore the old rule, we have to redefine when children are present. Now, last session, ODOT made several suggestions that provide a good starting point for this discussion. These would define children as present. And, you know, I have to say, there's two people I just realized on this committee whose name I eliminated from my testimony because they were in the forefront of this whole issue of trying to struggle with it. They've had to deal with this, what I call 10,000-pound chicken, because it is truly very hard. But let me give you an example of some of the things I guess some in this committee have considered before, ODOT has considered before, and even is recommending now. Children are present when they're occupying or walking within a crosswalk, or waiting at the curb or shoulder of a highway at a crosswalk, or present on or beside or walking along a highway, either on one adjacent sidewalk, or if there is not a sidewalk, on the shoulder of the highway, or on an exterior unfenced portion of a school grounds within 50 feet of the highway. Now, let me just say, when I said that to my staff, that's it, Peter. They just walked out of the room. Because that was their way of saying, you know, you can see somebody driving by in a car trying to check off all this list, so like a quarterback checking off all his receivers, and that's quite a litany. But at least it was an attempt to try to decide what is children are present. It may also be sensible to keep the provisions of 2003 law that permits local communities to post designated times when their school zone speed limits will be absolutely applied. This would allow local districts to tailor the speed limit around the actual traffic patterns around their schools, which vary considerably around the state. That in itself is also an interesting concept, but it definitely make sure that one size doesn't fit all, because what could happen, and I'm now starting to pick up the signals from the two individuals that I could have named and didn't, is that, you know, I know Salem somewhat. I know Jervis and Woodburn somewhat. Well, guess what? If I go to see a certain individual who lives near a great mountain, I may find myself in a certain sandy area. They got a whole different. I could get myself into real civil trouble. I could move into Washington County. You get down to Klamath Falls of Eugene or Coos Bay. It goes on and on. And if you know, you can have various standards throughout the state. And it's great if you live there and you become familiar with them. But if you're not familiar with them, you better have your eyes on the road, or you better be paying attention, assuming there's even signalization. So I'm saying some of these things with a smile, but I realize it's a very difficult problem. And, you know, the majority of this committee may think, you know, Peter, is upset as some people are, we're just going to leave the law alone. But I do think that we probably need to really look at this and discuss it again this session. It does need to be discussed. And I want to point out also that I don't think what we did last session was reckless or irresponsible, because if it had been, there was a tremendous effort went into how do you define it, and finally decided to define it by simply saying 20 miles an hour, 24/7, or under these circumstances. And while some people may think that's ridiculous, that was not ridiculous at all. It was an agony that had been gone through for so many sessions by people who really tried, and that was the best they could do. So I thank you for even considering the bill. I don't know what you're going to do, but I do think, as I say, it deserves some discussion, and I'm here for your questions, comments, or criticisms. And thank you for being willing to wait for me to come down, since I think I held up the committee here today.
Thank you, President Courtney. I'm used to television where they say stretch, so I was trying to really...
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I appreciate your comments. I do think, however, that just looking at my email, I'm getting parents who don't want the law change. So there are two sides to it. I'm wondering if you've had an opportunity to look at the fiscal statement that they just handed to us.
Chair Verger, I have not seen any statement like that.
Okay. I would like for you to have a copy of that, because it is quite impressive that 135 school zones, the remaining, have indicated that the speed zone in effect is at all times posted. And this is talking about the estimated cost to change those would be $78,570. And then they go on, it's just another statewide total, up to $786,159 for more than 235 cities. What's going to cost the cities and the counties and the state, because the signage apparently has been put out. Now, the one thing that I have had emailed to me in criticism is that there are different signs. In other words, it's not all conforming in every community. I've even had some people email me from some of the suburbs saying that there'll be several different signs. Now, I don't know whether they put up a new sign and didn't tear down the old signs or what. But when you look at what it's the cost of changing it, I had just said to the committee before you came in, I wonder if there's a simpler way to take care of people perhaps not getting tickets, which is what they seem to be concerned about in the middle of the night. When children are not present. I also talked about going down 101 yesterday and Sunday afternoon, going to the symphony in Coquille, and people immediately as they came to the Bunker Hill slowed down, and it was long line of traffic and everybody going very slow. Obviously, I don't think there were children present. However, let me say sometimes there are children present on Sunday at Bunker Hill School. Mm-hmm. And there are basketball games, and there are all kinds of events at the stadium there. So if you were to come around that curve at any high rate of speed, just because you thought it might be Saturday, mm-hmm. you may be coming into a zone that is full of children and their parents trying to get in and out of that major highway on 101. So it is a complex subject. I'm going to open it up to committee members for their questions and comments. Senator Prasansky, any? Senator Metzger, R. Starr, any comments or questions?
We're just commenting on the president, Mr.
Well, we're not here to comment on the president. We are here to comment on Senate Bill, let's see, 488, I believe it is.
Why would you have a comment for the president then?
Yes. Pardon me?
I would have a question.
You would have. Good. 488. And yes. Not on the president.
President Courtney, this is an interesting subject, and I don't know. I'd be curious about some of the feedback you have received. And I think we've all received some feedback. Now, if I tell you I haven't received a lot of feedback, I'm sure I'll generate the call, so I will get feedback. But interestingly or not, I have not received an overabundance over a period of a year. I did when it first came out a little bit, was on the radio and someone was talking about it, and I really haven't had much after that. But having said that, it's an issue that I think, as the chair said, as you pointed out, I think it's worthy of seeing if we can find a better way. Certainly the way it is written, even if we change back to the original word of when Shilton was present, that's just throwing up our hands in failure, because the reason we changed it was because that didn't work.
Right.
I think that does beg, can we make a better effort at this? But it's something that, as the chair mentioned too, it is a cost driver, and that certainly was pointed out in committee when we attempted to fix this problem, a couple of years ago. But I think your thoughts are wise to see, is there another way in which we can, A, provide some consistency and still protect kids? Because, like the chair, I have, of the comments that I have received as many of those who are saying, if you come to a stop sign at 2 in the morning, people stop. They don't say, well, there's no other people present, I'm just not going to stop at stop signs at 2 in the morning. We're conditioned, we stop. So in one standpoint, it seems a little bizarre to say, I think it's upsetting for me to go from 30 to 20 for a couple of blocks, but I'll come to a complete stop and not think a thing about it. So I think there's some way in which we can work this out. I was saying to Senator Starr when we were rudely not listening to the president speak, is that... like you, I think, with 101, where I have heard issues have been on those more state highways, the four-lane highways, where there happens to be schools, but the general driving speed is significantly higher. I can't say that I really have heard any complaints about the residential neighborhood schools. It's the Vision Street in Portland, or 101, or Highway 84. And so I think there may be something there, and I agree with both the chair and the Senate president, is that in this form this doesn't work, but we do need to look at it, and maybe we can come up with a resolution that doesn't cost another $700,000 to reverse what we did, but solves the problems that have been created for certain schools that happen to be located in an area in which traffic is not designed or should be designed to reduce that slowly.
Any other discussion? All right. Well, we do have some other people to testify. Would you like to continue? Oh, I'm sorry. It must have been a subtle signal.
It was very subtle. Senator McNair made me think about some of the stuff. I mean, I've actually heard it and still hear it, and it also includes urban areas as well as rural. And I know that, and it seems like we should come up with something. I wonder if there's been any discussion with anybody as to the old signs, whether those old signs are still even available for communities to be used. As compared to do they just get trashed and are recycled or into the tin cycling? Or?
We have some people coming up. Maybe you can pose that question to them.
Thank you. Also, I do want to say, there were some pretty outrageous things said after this bill passed. And I hope that you'll get some testimonial on the lines to find out. For example, I think my staff, Chris Garrett here, I'll get in trouble saying this. I'm not sure a single ticket's been handed out yet for going in a school district over 20 miles an hour at 2 o'clock in the morning. We shouldn't have to say that. But what I'm saying is, I think even law enforcement recognizes, not to go crazy, in terms of how this thing was written. So I think there's been a lot of misperceptions out there regarding this piece of legislation. And I'll tell you another thing. I thought the reason we did this is that children's safety was the bottom line.
Right.
And we had to change a mindset, the same way we did with DUII years and years ago, back in the early 80s with MAD, where literally people would just, to habit, react. I thought that's one of the things we were doing here. And it has done that. It has had an incredibly powerful, positive impact. And you've given an example. People see school zones, and they start diving for that gas pedal. And that was intended. as well it should be. So I don't want to say, no, I'm serious, that I think you said it best, Representative Senator, throw up your hands and just go back. And no way do I mean that at all. So I thank you very much for being patient. At least I didn't do, you know, I suppose I could have come down earlier and been taken out of order. I didn't do that. See what I mean? Because I'm a humble. I didn't do that. You know, so I didn't do that, Senator Brzezinski. I waited my turn.
Maybe Senator Johnson might be listening or something.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next, Troy Costales.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales. I'm the manager of the Transportation Safety Division with the Oregon Department of Transportation. And President Courtney really hit everything that I had put in my testimony in relationship to an evaluation of the bill as written, and would offer up our support and time in looking at what may need to be discussed in relationship to any changes to meet the needs of this committee in relationship to the way that Senate Bill 488 has been delivered. And bottom line, as was pointed out, that this is about the kids and also about eliminating the confusion of our drivers around the state, making sure that they know what it's expected of them when they enter into school zones and how fast they're supposed to be traveling. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, any questions for Travis and for Scott?
Thank you. This is Transportation Safety Division have any statistics on how many tickets have been written under this particular bill at 2 in the morning?
Madam Chair?
1 in the morning.
And Senator Starr?
Yeah.
And global? Madam Chair and Senator Starr, we have asked that question. We have heard of individuals claiming that they've received tickets at 2 in the morning on Sunday, and I have asked for copies of the tickets or of the court order from that ticket and have received none. As far as I can tell, the stories we have heard have all been urban myth, and I've been involved in lots of conversations in relationship to this bill and have made lots of requests for evidence proof of the fact that this is being abused by law enforcement and have yet to see something in print or a copy of it in order to say that that's true.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Yes.
As the state's chief transportation safety official, in your opinion, what's the most dangerous thing about what, as the enactment of the legislation that was passed last session, as its implementation, I should say, not enactment, as its implementation, the most dangerous thing? Is it the fact that we have a posted limit in residential zones at 20 miles an hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Or is it that when folks drive from jurisdiction to jurisdiction, there's no consistency between what each jurisdiction has listed on the signs? You know, some places it's 7 to 10 in the morning and, you know, 2 to 5 in the afternoon, and some places it's 7 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, and you don't know from one jurisdiction to the next. In your opinion, what's the most hazardous?
Madam Chair and Senator Starr, I start off with first that prior to this law going in on July 1st, the main media message carried by a lot of the industry in this state had the implementation of this bill incorrect. So what we did, we started out with a situation where a lot of people were confused in various parts of the state, thinking that all school zones were going 24/7. And so that started us off basically what I've been saying, swimming up the waterfall ever since, because it's been difficult to correct that very initial onset of incorrect information about what was happening with school zones. Second, at the beginning of implementation, not all the jurisdictions were able to make their sign changes by July 1st. So when message went out July 1st, the new school zone law was put in place, there was a lot of confusion by drivers as to what they were supposed to do, because they saw signs that they weren't sure were right or were wrong, because they've been hearing stories about cities not putting in changes, or school districts putting in changes, or county or the state putting in changes before July 1st of the implementation of the law. Since that time, the item that I have heard about the most in relationship to now going past those initial media issues and initial signing issues and go fast forward to today is actually something as small as the numbering on the signs when there are times posted, that in some cases, driving at 45, 50, 55 miles an hour, the posted signs, the 7 to 9, the 1 to 3, are not large enough at the current traveling speed for people to be able to see adequately, and so it's causing them to slow down enough to look at the sign, and you know that may not be adequate to say the same size as what the numbers may be indicating the 20-mile-hour limit. From, as some of you have mentioned, in getting information from citizens and from jurisdictions, I've gotten plenty, and told citizens as well as media and others about this particular bill. And after the confusion for the first few months of implementation, it's becoming more and more, believe it, from the positive side, that particularly the 24/7 piece, that people are appreciating that, particularly from the time piece, because drivers now know on their normal route when they have to slow down for the normal routine route. I've not heard from individuals that are going to other jurisdictions and what issues they may be facing and coming across school zones that may be signed time-wise a little differently. I've not personally received those types of complaints to my office. I'm not sure if I answered your question. Sorry, long drawn out response, but I'll give a little bit of tech context over the last year.
Well, Ms. Madam Chair, I think the issue that you did raise was that the size of the sign or the size of the print on the signs is an issue because folks have to slow down so maybe and be distracted in trying to read what the sign says. So I think that what I gathered from your response is maybe the most hazardous of the actions.
Yes, sir.
Senator Whitsitt.
First, a comment. You know, listening to Senate President Courtney, he said he uttered the phrase, "When children's safety is at risk," that might be the silver bullet that you're looking for. That would also, if you change the law, and we have to put some legal minds on that, but if you change the law to say when children's safety is at risk, it gives the driver an opportunity to use common sense and to use the law enforcement an opportunity to use common sense both.
Question, sir, do you have any sense of how many accidents may have been caused during the last biennium related to changing speeds on the open highway at a school zone where one person decides that it's 20 miles an hour is what you should do and the guy behind you doesn't pay attention to it?
Madam Chair and Senator Whitsitt, I do not have crash information from July 1st forward, which is the implementation of the bill, because typically crash information is 90 days from the crash to what's in the database. So all that's in the database now is July, August, and September. So it's a very, very small amount of time to try to compare. But it is something we have made a request that once the file is closed in April for all of last calendar year, we can have an idea, of, particularly for the 3 months of when generally school is in session from September to December. But today I cannot give you any information that's occurred since the enaction of this particular law.
It would seem to me that that perhaps the time when the school was not in session might be the most likely time for those accidents to occur, because some people think that, you know, as myself, you might not need to slow down because there's you know there's nobody there, and yet the vehicle in front of you might slow down because that's what the law says.
Thank you.
All right. Other questions? Senator Metzger.
Trey, I know you worked on this for a long time and worked with the committee last year on this. So I'll put you on the spot a little bit. I mean, if the committee was going to work on making some modification, what would be your recommendation? You've worked on this a lot. And I'd be curious as to what your thoughts are, the direction, your omnipotent guidance in this issue.
Madam Chair, Senator Metzger, on the spot it is. When looking at the school zone laws implemented, in particular Senate Bill 488, a couple things jump out about the bill. First, as Senate President indicated, the allowance for school districts to have times posted has been eliminated. And I believe that needs to be added back in because that has gotten positive reaction. Another item that the president did not mention, and that is during last session in conference committee at the very end of session, because of the 24/7 piece, the double fines option was removed.
Yeah.
And that was a debate, a trade-off between the 24/7 and the double fines. And a joint legislative committee talked about that and chose to remove that. So the question is, in those situations where there is not 24/7, if that's modified, do those schools then have the option to enhance the safety for children to bring back the double fines provision? And I will tell you, there are some jurisdictions that still have those up incorrectly. I can tell the one two blocks from my house has it that's still up, and it's not supposed to be there in the 24/7. The other option is to bring back the when children are present into the area around the schools. But, as the Senate President pointed out, it's been a debate in this building and amongst the professionals area for a decade about what that final definition is. And even with what the Senate President put in his testimony as far as the language of what ODOT originally proposed last year in Senate Bill 179, even that, there's some vagueness and some clarity issues around that. So I would guess to say to you that as you look at potentially implementing when children are present back to the school ground area roads, that to make it pretty clear and not drop back into the language that was in prior law that was vague, because basically we will be going back to the way we were and bring back the same problems we were having before about people getting citations with a child up on the stoop of the school hundreds of feet away from the school road or from the road in front of the school. So bottom line, I would say allow sign times back to discuss the double fine provision in and around the school zones, particularly if they go from 24/7 to a time signing situation. And that's about it. I wouldn't make too many more changes. Some jurisdictions want the 24/7 to remain, and that they've requested that.
Can I follow, Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Well, that's good, Troy. I think that's good guidance. And I think it is important to remember committee, too, and I'm glad you brought that up. I forgot all about that at the time, that you know there were some people saying, well, this was done to raise revenue, and it was just the opposite. We cut the revenue in half when we took away the double fine provision, which was inadvertent. We didn't intend to do that, but we definitely did. And I would certainly support, Madam Chair, the suggestion of the Senate President to see if we can put our certifiably smart people together to work on this so that we don't overly impact local governments, again, for cost, preserve our intent, which is to protect children, which should be our number one goal, and number three, to see where there is confusion or lack of clarity that can be corrected without impacting those other two issues, I think would be very positive. Because I think that despite the fact that we hear a lot of things, and I understand how you can orchestrate things either way, but I think it is notable that even though we have 48-hour posting notice and this is such a huge issue, there's not a single constituent in this room. They're all lobbyists, one security person and one press person. So, you know, I don't want to also overextend the significance of this and take a more deliberate approach to see if we can find a solution
that
works. Thank you.
Any other comments? All right, we do have someone else that would like to testify. Thank you, Troy. John O'Shell. I also see we have testimony from League of Oregon Cities. Did you want to testify? You might as well come up with AOC. You're good friends.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm John O'Shell, County Road Program Manager with the Association of Oregon Counties. I can be brief. Basically, we basically almost lockstep with Troy's testimony as far as where we are. It is about children's safety. When you see the fiscal and we toss out $100,000 for counties in terms of children's safety, trivial number. Now, we don't want to have to keep doing this and changing our signs every 2 years, but where our focus on this is just to make sure that we get to a solution. Once again, mostly with Troy, I think really what we're looking at is just a little clarity. I don't think we're looking at going backwards. My perception of most of what I've heard from my folks is there's been a great increased awareness of school zones over the last 2 years. That awareness in and of itself accomplished a lot. We have not hearing opposition at all to the 24/7 on the lower speed roads. I think that just sailed right through. The issues we have been hearing have been on the higher speed roads, and I think more than the opposition to the speed zone itself has been the clarity issue. And that may well be able to just be dealt with by changing the size of our signs, which doesn't take legislative action, but I think as we're hearing more from the folks, we're hearing that may be the issue, and there's a process administratively to get that happen, and we will be encouraging that. Whichever direction you take, you will find the Association of Bourbon County very supportive on any direction you want to go for this, because that is the goal, and that is the most important
piece. Thank you, John. That's a great attitude. I appreciate that, too. All right, next.
For the record, my name is Christy Munson, representing the League of Oregon Cities. Our testimony is much like the county's. Cities, policy-wise, aren't in one place regarding whether 24/7 is a good idea or a bad idea. We haven't had a lot of outcry from our cities saying it was a bad bill. We do have a couple cities talking to us. Either way, as far as the policy piece and that decision, we're neutral on anything that you should come up with. We want to just make sure that it's not going to cost our cities and that we're not going to be here 2 years from now changing signs again. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your testimony.
Madam Chair.
I see, excuse me.
I think these might be the two people that could maybe answer. Have you heard feedback from your cities or counties as to whether they retained any of the old signage?
Madam Chairman, Senator, actually I had a note that I didn't read. When I was asking for fiscal impacts, about half my county said it won't cost near as much as last time because we saved the signs. So once again, in terms of everything, they knew that there was enough uproar that they saved signs. A lot of them just tagged their hourly riders on top of the other riders.
Right.
So most of our time, frankly, is just having people drive to the various sites. There's probably more money in the driving than actually the sign installation itself.
So there are certified people out there in the field.
All right. Any other questions? All right.
Yes. Madam Chair, Christy Munson for the League again. I just wanted to note we asked that question of our cities, and of the 35 cities who responded, they're all over the board. A lot of them just put stickers up to cover when children are present. Some of them put riders onto existing signs that could be replaced with different riders, and some of them replaced signs completely. Some saved, some didn't. So we're all over the board.
Okay. All right, thank you. I see Senator George in the back. Senator George, did you want to add any testimony or witness to this particular bill?
You want me to tell you a list of horror stories? I'm going to try to pretend to do it. Come with me, young man. No.
We need those 2 a.m. stories.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. I've never had as much communication on any subject as I've had on this. I've never had threatening phone calls except on this issue. And people from the standpoint of either if you voted for this, you're gone. And, of course, most of us voted for this. There was only one person that I knew of that actually knew what the bill said.
You're
That's
still here.
Terrible testimony.
You're not gone.
Yeah. Well, I told them that it was a temporary period of insanity. And but what happened, of course, we had looked at this thing since the beginning of 1997. Is when our children are present. You know, a lot of states use an example of a child is present when you can see one. And yet we came up to the conclusion that we did this time, and it is going to be about signage. I'm concerned. I think the balance that you've taken this committee is well thought out from the standpoint of let's not do anything different, at least at this time, until we know it's a better thing to do. But I do need to tell a couple stories. I do involve trucks. One of them I was delivering into Polk County, a 40-foot load of tote boxes, and I was going down a road I'd never been down before in a rural area, and I was doing probably 50, 55 miles an hour, and I came over a bridge and I saw the sign, you know, school zone. I didn't know what to do at that speed other than just, you know, almost lock it up and try to get slowed down as much as I could as I got to the school zone. There's obviously some question about whether there's appropriate posting. As it turned out, I was not violating the law, but I could have been. I had a case in which several truckers, because, you know, I'm CDL licensed truck driver, several truckers have told me that the thing that they fear the most is because they're commercial, they're normally, you know, used to whatever the new rules are. They'll be driving into an area only to find somebody in a little red car, doesn't know, panics, it's not 20 right now, they hit the brakes right in front of them. And of course, even though trucks have wonderful braking systems, they're not a little red car. We had another one in which a fellow was riding his motorcycle, and I had to think of that with the tie on today, and the person saw the sign, recognized that he needed to be at 20, immediately slowed up. The trucker was unfamiliar with the area. This occurred in Yamhill, almost ran over the motorcyclist. So I think whatever we do, it needs to be to finally reach a point in which we're consistent, it is understandable, and that we have proper signage out there to make sure that some of these things don't happen. We still get phone calls on it. I don't know if all of you do. People are still mad about it. In fact, if I go into a couple of places like in Lafayette or someplace like that, somebody will normally walk up and say, "What are you going to do something about that?" In fact, we were going to draft a bill until we heard there were plenty of them out there. And so we appreciate you looking at this issue, but please let's not make any more decisions until we know, what was happening. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions or tell any more stories.
Any questions?
Thanks, you guys.
All right. Thank you very much, Senator George. Well, I'm going to close the public hearing on Bill 488. Committee, I have the packet in front of you that for the Ways and Means Committee, if you missed that, and you may attend at any of the sessions in the next time. Our next trip on the road will be on April the 1st, and the location will be announced very soon. I'm going to be working with Judith, and we'll get all of that lined up so that you'll have that. Any other comments or questions? Okay. If not, and there's no other business to come before this body, I'll call the meeting adjourned.